Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by the Committee for a Sequel to Ghost Rider. As a thank you, we will now list all of our donating members. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome, MacGuffin Men. I'm Alex. James will be joining me right now. Here's part two of our podcast about the Mission Impossible series.
Yeah, so six more years. We're on to MI3.
Yeah.
Who's directing MI3 now?
J.J. Abrams in his feature film directorial debut.
And how's that work out?
Awesome.
Yeah.
this is a really, really good movie.
Okay.
I'm confident if I was born in 1996 instead of 1986, Mission Impossible 3 would be one of those movies that was just like The Rock to me. Like, yeah. It's just this great action movie. As it stands, I don't love it like a 10-year-old me would have, but I think it's a really, really good action movie, and I do think it is absolutely one of the best post-2000 action movies that's been made.
Okay.
I think top three at the worst.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know you felt so strongly about
it. Oh, I love this movie. I'm watching it again. My roommate Nick and I watched number two together, and then a couple days later watched number three. And when we were watching number three, during the, like, as the opening credits are rolling after the opening scene, which is, by the way, amazing, with Owen and Ethan doing the countdown thing. That's so good. Such a good scene. Nick says, those 4 minutes were already better than anything that happened in Mission Impossible 2. And he's totally right.
Okay. Yeah. And then we start meeting the new crew.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's the first thing that they really have to do.
They have to save Kerry Russell's character. It was the first person.
Felicity.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And J.J. Abrams, the reason he wanted to do Alias was because when he was working on Felicity, another show he created in the late 90s, starring Kerry Russell as Felicity, during the middle of the first season, they started having problems thinking up plots. And he was just like, wouldn't it be awesome if Felicity was a spy? And then we'd never have to worry about thinking of a plot ever again. And that was sort of the beginning of him pitching Alias. Felicity never became a spy, but Sidney Bristow did.
Yeah.
And J.J. Abrams making this movie, Kerry Russell being a nod to, you know, the two shows he worked on.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she's an agent. She was trained by Ethan Hunt. Mm-hmm. I think the first one that he said was ready to go in the field or something.
Yeah, his first agent that he is comfortable clearing for the field.
Bad news. She gets caught.
Yeah.
They go in and rescue her because they think she'll have some very valuable information. Mm-hmm. Again, they don't just rescue you because you got caught. They rescue you if they think you can help with something, some knowledge you've obtained in the meantime. They go to get her. Crazy helicopter chase ensues.
Yeah, which is silly.
Yeah, you don't like it?
I think that's probably the weakest action scene.
And I don't like the pilot either.
Jonathan Rhys-Meyers?
Yeah.
He's just skinny, sexy spy. That's all it is.
Okay. She dies.
Kerry Russell dies.
Kerry Russell dies.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be sad, but when she dies and her eyes go all wonky, I can't stop a laugh.
I think she looks creepy. It doesn't make me laugh. I'm not emotionally invested, but I think it her face looks sad. I don't think it's funny.
It makes me laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we get, I love this part. What's happened to Tandy Newton in the meantime?
She's disappeared.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
Yeah.
So that female character is gone. And then we get his kind of,
she was Penelope Cruz to Tom Cruise's Katie Holmes.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll meet Katie Holmes momentarily.
Okay. We get Ethan's, like, why Ethan is so sad about this girl dying. And as we discussed, he trained her and stuff.
Yeah.
And we get this montage of, like, oh, let's care about Kerry Russell now. And it's weird. They kind of, I don't know, the order seems mixed up to me. Like, now she's dead. Okay, here's who this girl was and why. Like, it seems like you do those in the opposite direction, but I guess you need to start with action.
Yeah, I bet at some point that came first, but it just sort of worked out that we kind of need this action scene where it is, and it goes.
Yeah, and he's sad.
Yes.
But he's has to hide it because he's living a normal life now.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan Hunt's gone straight.
Sure.
Not a gay thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know.
No, either, like, he's not a criminal either, really.
Yeah, you're right. But he's, I guess you don't see this in 1 and 2 where he's ever trying to live like a normal person.
No, no.
Unless normal people just rock climb alone with no safety equipment. Yeah. But anyway. So yeah, this one is kind of his, you know, this time he's got an alternate identity, pretty much.
Yeah.
He's Ethan Hunt, the IMF agent and trainer, but he's also the Virginia Department of Transportation something who lives
something
with
like
some adorable girl.
Michelle Monaghan.
I know.
Who I love.
I know.
Thank you.
And she's adorable.
Oh, she's a good actress.
Win-win.
Yeah. I enjoy her a lot.
Good.
Yeah. On an underrated podcast that we never put out there, she was my choice for underrated actress.
Oh, good. Such an underrated podcast, it didn't even get out.
You haven't even heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's going on with him and Miss Monaghan?
They're going to get married. They're going to settle down.
Yep.
And, they're having a party. Quickly, Ethan has to go back into the field because he's basically trying to avenge her death, but also get the rabbit's foot, which was what
I know
Harry Russell was trying to get.
We're in this one.
Pardon?
We're in this movie.
You and I?
Yeah.
How?
The MacGuffin.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
This is the, like, if you want to know what a MacGuffin is, just watch Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah.
The rabbit's foot, you don't know what it is, what it does, but it has no purpose other than to just move the plot along and force all the action.
Yeah.
Textbook MacGuffin is the rabbit's foot in this one. Anyway. They're about to get married. She's reminiscing with all her family about all the wonderful things they've done.
Yep.
Including a trip to Lake Wanaka.
Wanaka.
Anyway.
Yeah. And so Ethan Hunt gets sort of pulled back into the field and
I was retired. One last job, and then I'm good.
And yeah, he's trying to hunt Owen Davian, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Woo!
Who is a stellar villain.
So good, right?
He's amazing.
He has this thing where he seems to be bored with how evil he is, and it doesn't sound like a good way to play it, but it works so well. Like, it's like, I've been so evil for so long, it's not even a thing anymore.
It's just
like, I'm just pure evil.
He's so incredible in this movie. And he has maybe three scenes, you know? Like, but the opening scene, I mentioned it, is so good. Like, I rewatched that scene three times, you know, just because I just love it.
What's his opening?
Like, it's where just sort of the movie just starts and we see Tom Cruise in this chair, and Owen has a gun to his wife, Michelle Monaghan, and he's counting. And is sort of counting to 10, like, tell me where the rabbit's foot is. And we're just sort of thrown into this action.
Yeah.
And the credits roll when he says 10 and we hear a gunshot, and then the credits roll immediately, and then we basically flash back, and it's such a wicked way to start a movie. And it's not really an action scene, but it's probably the most intense scene in the movie.
Yeah, it just gets you into it right away.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's so good in this.
Oh, God,
I don't know what else we can say about
and when he's
him being
like
awesome.
when Ethan's holding him outside of the airplane and he pulls him back in, and he's just like, Ethan, like, he knows he knows your name.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I just, what's your name before that? Like, just so
I'm gonna find
just
her. I'm gonna hurt her, and then I'm gonna kill her right in front of you. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, he's a winner. Why isn't he a bad guy more often?
I have no idea.
And this is our first Simon Pegg appearance in the franchise.
Yeah, playing Benji.
How do you like him?
Good. It's fine.
How do you like his anti-God speech?
I think it's fine. I think it's there to appease people that aren't happy with the fact that nobody really knows what they're chasing.
Okay.
It's pretty heavily implied that the anti-god is the rabbit's foot.
Yeah, without ever really connecting the two. He kind of just has this speech. It seems to function of just raising the stakes without tying to the plot at all. But whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. Puts the fear of God in everybody and, game on. And after this, one last person to mention would be Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes.
This time running the IMF or his boss or something.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. It's just a rotating cast.
No, exactly. But
this
is a really strong cast, and that seems like a job that would have a lot of turnover, does it not?
I guess. Yeah. I don't think it would. Isn't that something?
How many times can you fail in that job before you get fired?
That's true, but how many times do you want to fire someone who has all this information?
How old is Anthony Hopkins?
Like 70?
Yeah, that dude's retiring.
Okay.
Yeah. And Phelps dies. So
true.
But
so, I don't think Phelps didn't have the same job as Lawrence Fishburne did.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that was more Kittredge, but
yeah.
I think it's plausible that there's more than one Kittredge up there, too.
And I think it's unacceptable that chocolate makes you fat.
Okay. Don't interrupt me when I'm asking rhetorical questions.
Yeah, and then so our next mission is to get into the Vatican, which is a fun little scene.
Yeah, it's cool.
I like it.
Yeah, no, it's good.
You get the some more gadgets and stuff, which I'm always a big fan of.
Yep, probably my third favorite action scene in the movie, though.
Okay, yeah. Some more masks.
Yep.
Some more fun.
Which is sweet. With the effect where where Tom Cruise is putting on the Philip Seymour Hoffman mask and the camera turning over and the face.
Yeah.
He basically turns into Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think
that's
super cool.
And when he's in the bathroom and he's like downloading the voice out of the file. I think that's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
And then you get your Lamborghini or Ferrari or something.
Yeah.
Just to round out the action spy movie checklist.
Nick, another point my roommate pointed out was he said he would love to see the expense report that they're sending in to IMF for these, these missions.
So unnecessary.
We needed to buy this super ridiculously expensive dress and also this Lamborghini or whatever kind of car.
So we can blow it up in 8 minutes.
And then we also need a boat to escape. Like a really nice boat.
Yeah, but that the entire cost of that car is worth the exchange of, what's up with you? Nothing. What's up with you? And it's such a weird exchange, and it's so short, but it cracks me up
It's so key that he's still Philip Seymour Hoffman at that point.
Yeah, oh yeah. Because Tom Cruise could do that, but the Philip Seymour Hoffman is killer.
Yeah.
And yeah, for all the good moments that Luther has in this series, that might be like top one or two.
It's so good.
So, so funny.
I guess we should just sort of move along, because I mean, it's pretty nonstop action for this point. It's just action scenes connected, and the bridge scene after they capture Owen Davian, they're transporting him across a bridge and Owen Davian's people come to pick him up, and it's just
like it's totally Dark Knight.
Basically.
It really does.
It's a really awesome action sequence.
Yes.
Really, really great. And
yes, enjoyable.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. There's nothing really super notable about it other than that it's just this perfectly well done action sequence.
Yeah. Which brings me to a question that I want to ask.
Yes.
Why is number two seen as like this completely ridiculous, over the top, off the wall action thing when number three is almost nonstop action and has a lot of goofy stuff too? Is it because two is goofy action? Is that the difference?
There's such a higher level of goofiness in two.
Yeah.
There's the car dance sequence, where they're like attached to each other and, you know, like moving back and forth, and the idea in that is, those cars are dancing because it's after this tango sequence.
Yeah.
And the motorcycle, like they did wheelies and then jumped off the motorcycle.
I know. No, I'm not trying to say two.
And some of the stuff,
silly,
like with the doves where Ethan's just walking by and doves are just flying, you know, like there's just so much ridiculous stuff in two. And the way the movie sells the ludicrous stuff to us in three is different.
Okay.
It's sort of, Ethan always looks effortless in two, whereas three things come a little bit harder.
Yeah, it's true. I guess just looking back at people's common perception of it, it seems like three gets a complete pass on tons of ridiculous stuff that happens in it, just because after two, it didn't seem as crazy.
And I think I care far more about the people involved in three than I do two.
Yeah.
And I mean the characters.
I think
there's so much more. Yeah, that's the difference. The emotional thing is less ridiculous in three, because in two, it's like, oh, they meet. They do the car dance. Oh, they bang. Oh, they're totally in love.
Oh, they're in love. Yeah.
Whereas in three, it's sort of set up that they've been together for a while and you can sort of get behind
that. Yeah. The first time that it gets suggested that Tandy Newton's in danger or is going to like maybe, you know, fall in love and spend time with Sean Ambrose again.
Mm-hmm.
And they show Ethan and he's so hurt by it. I'm like, what? Yeah. What is, this is where this is going now?
Yeah,
we care? Whatever.
Yeah.
Sure. And the ending's enjoyable in three as well.
I think it's all right. I think it's the one sequence we haven't talked about that I really love is the fulcrum thing they do. Where
more Dark Knight stuff, by the way.
Yeah, 2 years before the Dark Knight.
And in Asia and like trying to get this guy from this huge. Yeah.
No, I'm aware.
No, I know. Okay. Yeah. Just making sure.
I'm just making sure you know the Dark Knight came afterwards.
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. No, someone just pointed that out and I was looking back. I'm like, yeah, there are a couple notes there that are pretty Dark Knight that I never noticed.
And he does sort of like swings from one building to another. The thing I think that's cool, and he's sliding down, and he's, you know, shooting these guards. The thing I think is really cool about that scene is it's just sort of like they show Ethan going in, we know what he has to do. And then we cut to Maggie Q and John Rhys-Meyers' characters in the car waiting for Ethan because they're sort of like a radio cutoff. We don't follow Ethan throughout this action sequence. And they had planned, like, he's got 5 minutes, and then they mentioned in the scene that it's been 12. And it's like, we're waiting for Ethan. And it's like, what are these people doing while they wait? Because you never see that in a movie.
Yeah.
What do these people do? And they sort of start having a conversation, and then they hear on the walkie-talkie, it's me, I'm coming, I couldn't get to the roof, you know? Yeah. And they're like, what? And he's like, look up! And he just jumps out the window, and then boom, we're in this action sequence.
Yeah.
And that's really cool to me. I like it a lot.
No, and like what you said in the first one of him being tired, it's just something that we don't see in action movies like this.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, what are the other people in the team doing when he's... Because he's killing people. Like, shit's going down while you're showing that conversation.
Right. It's basically... I'm pretty sure it's the Mission Impossible 2 sequence. Where,
This is the difference between 2 and 3.
This series is really big on recycling action sequences.
Yeah. And, there's something else I want to say about that, but we'll get to it after we talk about all of them.
And then they sort of end up in Shanghai, because Tom Cruise Ethan was getting the rabbit's foot, and now he's getting picked up by Damien's people by himself to exchange the rabbit's foot for his wife.
Yeah.
It's a decent sequence. Ethan thinks his wife dies. She doesn't. It was Damien's translator, which is good. I like that.
She didn't die?
Well, I like that she didn't die. I like the way that they did it.
Yeah, I like the mask stuff and all of them. I think 3 has some cool stuff, like that one especially, but,
and then they sort of kill a couple other people, and Ethan has to defuse one of those charges that Keri Russell had in her head. He has to defuse one of those from inside of his head. And
she kind of has to defuse
it. Yeah, she has to do it.
Get a little bit of... Matrix 1 ending too.
Yeah.
Where you have to, your loved one hero dies and your love brings them back. But done
also
less wienery in this one compared to the
it's
Matrix.
Not just, first she doesn't kiss his corpse. Yeah, that never happened.
And it's not her love that revives him.
Yeah, she's using medical techniques. Yeah. So there's that.
There is that. I do.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I also just enjoy how confused Michelle Monaghan is in this. Like, she just gets taken, has no idea that her husband's even a spy. What are we doing in China? Just the other side of the world, no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to understand, like, she get raped? Is that...
I don't think that's ever implied.
No?
No.
Okay. Because there's that part where he's like, oh, she screamed my name, or screamed your name. I mean, that could just be torture, but...
No, I think that's just her getting kidnapped.
I don't know. PSH seems pretty evil.
He does seem pretty evil. I don't think it's ever implied in the movie that she gets raped.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair. Any other favorite things, least favorite things about MI3?
I think parts of the last stuff in Shanghai are pretty goofy. I don't like the way Ethan talks to Monaghan when he's like telling her how to load a gun. I don't like that. It's like the batteries for the flashlight in the kitchen. I think that's just, it's a little too pandering, you know?
And I get that it's supposed to be like, oh, he's taking things from their life. Yeah. But it's like the flashlight,
it's too much.
What about Jesse Pinkman? Yeah.
He's got a tiny role, but he plays Monaghan's brother.
We weren't watching this movie together, but you can imagine how excited I got when I realized Jesse Pinkman was in this movie.
Looking very season one Breaking Bad-ish.
Yes.
But it's a good movie. I think this is one of my favorite Tom Cruise performances in this movie.
Oh, yeah?
I think he's really great in this movie. It's the only movie in the series that I think he gives a really good performance. And I really buy the emotional stakes of this movie. It helps that I was a Michelle Monaghan fan before this movie. But I think the two of them work well together. I buy that they're in love, and I buy that Tom Cruise really cares about his wife in this movie. So I think that's why this movie works. As goofy as it is, as corny as some of it is, particularly when they're walking away at the end and stuff. But I think the movie works. I buy the emotional aspects, and I absolutely buy the action aspects.
Good.
Great movie.
All right. Case closed on MI3 there.
Yeah.
We are, of course, talking about Mission Impossible 4.
Yeah.
Ghost Protocol.
I would like to point out I have 3 notes for this movie. 1 is Dubai. 1 is no villain. 3 is no plot. Or 1, 2, 3. I think I said 1, 1, 3, but anyway.
Initial impressions of this movie.
It's cool. The Dubai stuff is really awesome.
Okay, but watching this, initial impressions, the first few minutes into this, what are you thinking?
Oh, I was kind of bummed out that it wasn't Tom Cruise doing the jump off the building, shoot behind me thing.
Yeah.
Because that part was really cool in the trailer.
And the
and it was less
the
cool in the
airbag or whatever went under it. That part was sick.
Yeah. No, that was pretty cool. I don't know. I remember, and I guess I wasn't that excited for this movie because I always felt like MI3 was sort of a flash in the pan. Like, I didn't expect.
Like, it wasn't going to be this good again.
I didn't think Mission Impossible 4 would be particularly good. But yeah, I don't know. I thought the action, the first scene was decent, and then Ethan breaking out of jail or breaking into jail to get somebody and then breaking out.
Yeah.
It's been a couple months since I've seen it now because I saw it the first day it was in theaters. I haven't seen it since. Yeah, I thought it was pretty underwhelming at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that part, I do like where he jumps off and shoots those people and lands, and then the blonde assassin kills him. What I thought was silly about that part, though, was for all their, like, coding and disguises and stuff, he puts people in his phone as assassin.
Yeah.
Like, that part, I was like, guys, come on. Yeah. For all the stealth stuff you do, assassin in big, like, capital letters. That part was goofy to me.
Absolutely.
And then when they start up with the credits, it's just, I mean, you know you're going to go see Tom Cruise in this movie, but his name is just all over the credits. It's like, produced by Tom Cruise in a Tom Cruise picture.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was probably like a Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner production.
Yeah, yeah. But in just huge... Actually, I don't think Paula Wagner is... Does she do this one?
Oh, yeah. Maybe they broke up after three or something.
It's not her. And that's why even more so it's just Tom Cruise, like huge letters.
Maybe after the Paramount thing, the two of them split up. That's a good point.
I call it Mission Tom Possible.
Okay.
Ghost Protocruz. Because...
You didn't get the end of Protocol in there.
Protocruz. Anyway,
EOL didn't make it.
The point is, he's all over this movie. He's not just the star. We talked about this in 2 and 3. Like, he has a big hand in this. Lake Wanaka, which is a small plot point in number 3.
Yeah.
That's
it's cool
a that place that he shot another movie in, Last Samurai. Like, and I know that's not like, you know, he's wielding this crazy power, but he's such a huge part of this. Like, this isn't just like anybody else starring in a series. This is his baby. Like, it's been from 96, and I think he has a big part in who gets casted and the script and everything.
Yep.
Like, and 4 really drives that home right in the credits right away. Yeah. Who directed this one?
Brad Bird, previously of The Iron Giant, The Incredibles, and Ratatouille.
Who knew?
I did.
No, but who knew that that's where this career would lead?
Oh, that's true.
MI4.
Yeah.
Did you notice that MI4 is a little... similar to MI1, Mission Impossible?
They're all fairly similar movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like, this is a series, I just said it in 3, that is not afraid to retread. You know?
I mean, we get the him being lowered into or onto something on the cable, which is always a bit of like a...
Every movie.
callback or something, but it's still a plot point. This one, again, he's like... disowned by the IMF or framed or something, and now he goes rogue with his own team. And I just find it similar to kind of like 1 and 3 combined, which funny enough makes 4. But there's that same scene where he's dressed up as like an older authority figure at this place, and the computer nerd is downloading the file while they're scanning his passport. Like, that happens in number 1 and 4, like, perfectly. I know. I mean, there's probably a lot of stuff that gets repeated there's so many things like that. How do you like the new cast in this one? I mean, we get Simon Pegg back.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't love that Luther isn't a part of the mission. Kind of bums me out.
Yeah, and I mean, it's...
He's the other constant in these movies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's just Tom Cruise, and then there's a chart on the... on Wikipedia, if you look, of who's in each one.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like Tom Cruise's bar across the top, and then it's just like blocks of new cast every movie because it's a new girl, it's a new... Everyone new in IMF, and other than Simon Pegg, like, he gets a new crew of people every time, too.
Yep.
And, yeah, you never really hear what happens to the old people and why they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the girls, I think, is the thing that deserve the most explanation, but this doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think, you know, sort of like the helicopter pilot in 2 or whatever, it's just sort of, I assume he's working on different missions with different teams, you know, like, and stuff like that. Like, these people are basically, you know, they'll work wherever there's work. It's not like Ethan is the only person running these teams.
Yeah,
so that's always how I feel with that. The girls are, well, and I guess it's just Tandy Newton that's unexplained, but
I want to be on Tom Cruise's team.
Okay. It's fine. What if John Hamm is one of the other agents? He's got a team.
That's tough.
Yeah.
It's very tough.
Yeah.
I guess I'd take the Hamm, but whatever. Yeah. Okay, well, you brought it up. Dubai.
Yeah, the, sweet.
Just that? The word Dubai?
This is like a... Well, at one point they go to Dubai and everything that happens in Dubai is sweet in this movie. And the Burj Khalifa sequence is, you know, very highly publicized. He's climbing up... is it the tallest building in the world?
Yes.
Okay. And, like, I didn't even see this movie in IMAX, and that scene kind of terrified me.
Yeah.
yeah, it's a really cool sequence. And even the stuff outside of him being on that building is really cool. All the stuff in Dubai is just the high point of that movie, for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I said earlier, but one thing I like about spy movies is that you get the globetrotting, you get to go all over the place. And this is one of the first big action movies to take, you know, advantage of what a crazy, cool, unique place Dubai looks like.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
that's true.
And that, you know, 20 years ago, there wouldn't have been all this crazy stuff to do, right. But now it's, you know, a new, interesting place, and they totally utilize that.
Tom Cruise sees a new giant building, and he wants to play on it.
Exactly. And yeah, that whole sequence is cool. Not even the climbing thing, but with the two meetings going on the different floors and stuff.
I think it's very cool. And then the sandstorm at the end, I like.
Yeah. Mm. Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
Let's talk about Jeremy Renner.
Let's.
I think we disagree about Jeremy Renner in this film.
Yeah.
In our brief discussion about this movie.
Yeah. Why don't you say your piece?
That was my review of Jeremy Renner's performance in this movie.
Okay. Yeah, Jeremy Renner isn't a good actor.
Is he not?
Nope.
How did he fool everybody?
He was in a couple good movies. The Hurt Locker, which he's not very good. He gives like a really over-the-top performance. And he's fine in the scenes where he's defusing bombs, which, by the way, he doesn't do a lot in.
Yeah.
He looks, you know, tough and kind of panicked. And at one point he screams when he sees a dead child or something. And it's very over-the-top actory. The other movie he's in that people seem to like him in is Gone Baby Gone. Does he give a good performance in... Or, sorry, The Town. No, does he give a good performance in The Town? No! and just all of a sudden... Yeah, and I don't know. What's his third most notable performance? That Pink video he was in?
The Avengers.
Yeah, that hasn't come out yet.
I know.
Yeah, no, he's just not a good actor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that speech he has about why when those people got killed when he was supposed to be watching them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's his big like soliloquy where he gets a. Oh, I just thought it was such a dud. Like,
yeah, he's not a good actor. That's why.
Yeah, but there's only probably about five moments in most Mission Impossible movies where they try to ground it.
Yeah,
and this was one of them, and it was really long and isolated, and I just thought it totally missed the mark. You mentioned the sandstorm scene.
Yes.
You're a fan?
Yeah, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. Tom Cruise running.
Yep.
You've discussed it on the blog.
Yes.
It is something that happens in all of them. I don't know if it happens in two, though.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I'm sure he runs.
He runs on a motorcycle.
He certainly runs, you know, but I think John Woo just used slow motion so much that...
he appears to be walking. Yeah. What's your take, briefly, on the Tom Cruise running thing?
Well, I mean, the thing I wrote was super abstract, how I treat it. It's just that, you know, he's just trying super hard at all times, and that's sort of what I appreciate about Tom Cruise. It's not like, because running is often used as a metaphor for, you know, a character running away from something. Well, in these movies, he's literally running away from things, like a collapsing building. But I don't think Tom Cruise is running away from or towards anything. I think he's just running because he's always trying harder than anybody else. And that's the thing to admire about Tom Cruise. Set reports of him on action movies are always like, he's always game for anything.
Yeah.
He does all the stunts. Whenever anybody will let him do a stunt, he's doing it. He'll give his all every time, and that's what's cool about Tom Cruise.
Yeah, and no, that's what I mean. It just goes hand in hand with what I said about him having such a big part in the scripts and the casting and everything. Like, he works so hard, and this is his series. Like, and he, you know, you could have put somebody else in the Ethan Hunt role in the first movie, but he really like took the series and steered it and made it his own. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
Anything else to say about Ghost Protocol Cruise?
I don't really like it. Much. I think the order of these movies to me is 3-1-4-2. And I think 4 is totally serviceable. Like I said, there's
so little plot in this movie. Not that, you know, these are super dense plot-wise generally, but it's just sort of like, well, we have to do this to save the world. And it's just action sequence with, like, 2 minutes of downtime, sequence.
What's the danger in this one again?
The end of the world.
Yeah, but by what means?
I don't know. Something that a villain has.
Okay.
Gotcha. And the other thing I really don't like about this movie is I can't even picture the villain. Like,
yeah,
this movie has a villain, I've been told. I can picture the foxy French assassin, but I can't picture the actual villain of this movie. And yeah, I think that hurts, particularly after Philip Seymour Hoffman was so good in 3. But yeah, there was just nothing memorable about the villain.
Yeah, and that's something... Yeah, now let's look at kind of the whole series altogether here. How do you feel about the quality of villains other than Philip Seymour Hoffman? I mean, 4, you said you can't even picture him. What was his name? What was his motivation? I think everyone forgets pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Let's go backwards. Philip Seymour Hoffman was a businessman who wanted more money. I mean, I think he played the character well, but what is that character?
Yeah. Just bad. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I think Philip Seymour Hoffman, as I was watching 3, that character is so underwritten.
Yeah.
And as I was watching it again, I was like, how did they get Philip Seymour Hoffman as this character?
And then 2, Sean Ambrose is a IMF guy who goes bad. I don't know why.
Trevelyan.
Something. Yeah, it's Trevelyan. Again, we don't really know.
Because they're supposed to be doppelgangers and all that stuff.
Yeah. And then Kittredge and Jim Phelps in the first one.
Yeah. More Phelps than Kittredge. Kittredge is just sort of trying to catch Hunt. He's not really a villain.
Job.
Max is more of a villain than Kittredge.
Yeah, Max, I guess, is... Yeah, and again, what do you know about any of these characters, any of these villains? This is more realistic than... I mean, I was thinking about it compared to the Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, I mean, I guess 2 is pretty wonky. It's kind of more realistic than some other Bond movies and stuff. And the villains really aren't gimmicky. Like, they're just dudes.
Villains,
like,
yeah.
There's nothing you can't... Their names don't stick with you because they're not crazy names like Jaws and Goldfinger.
Nobody has a glass eye.
Yeah, or like some... Exactly. So many Bond villains...
They're not asthmatics.
Yeah, so many villains in other movies have this one thing about them. And I think in Mission Impossible, it keeps it realistic in that sense. Or these villains are the realistic part, usually.
Yep.
There's nothing, you know, that weird about it.
Yeah.
And... Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt has a problem fighting old people, it seems. Like, him fighting Jim Phelps should not be close to an even fight. Him fighting this, like, 70-year-old...
John Voight's still a pretty big guy, you know, and he's only, like, he's only in his 50s there. I think it's... And how much real fighting are they doing? Yeah.
50s?
Yeah. How much real fighting are the two of them doing? It's basically a chase, and Tom Cruise is... Or Hunt is catching him.
No, but there's some hand-to-hand stuff, because I remember laughing at it.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and then in this one, when he fights old dude who neither of us can remember.
Yeah.
A ridiculous...
Is he old?
Yeah, a crazy...
You could have told me it was the baby from, like, car insurance commercials and whatever
the commercials are. E-Trade? The fights are... I don't know. The fights are way too close with the old people. That's the one thing I don't find realistic about the villains. How do you feel about them having the almost entirely new cast every time they do a movie?
I'm fine with it. It's a spy movie type thing.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, compared to the other franchises, like maybe Bourne or...
Bourne doesn't count because Bourne is one story told over 3 movies.
Okay.
This is more of a franchise. And I think comparing Bourne and Mission Impossible is sort of... It's tough because Bourne is one story. It's about to be 2, but, as the Bourne movies, as we know in February, 2012, it's one story. Whereas Mission Impossible is more Bond, because Bond is these serial adventures with things that link them together, like Moneypenny and James Bond himself,
and
you know, like,
M and Q,
but these things don't need to be in every movie. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, different directors, I mean, they're not trying for any kind of consistency. It seems like.
Yeah,
they're all over the place. Yep. I mean, when you hire Brian De Palma and John Woo, you're not expecting the same product.
Yeah, and I mean...
And that's kind of one of the fun things about it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I like about this series is that... I mean, one of my problems with 4 is that it was so similar to 3. And just visually, stylistically, everything that they tried to do, it seemed like they were trying to make a sequel to 3.
Okay.
Which is the first time in the series that they've tried to, like... definitely, clearly make an actual sequel to the story that we saw before.
Right.
And part of the things that they did hold over from 3 like the story of what happens to Tom Cruise's wife, I think is good. I like how they use that. But yeah, I think that was my biggest problem with 4, is that it was a definite sequel to 3 as opposed to being another serial adventure.
Like the other ones have been. Yeah. You said it's pretty tough to compare this to Bourne. I mean, for some of the reasons you just described there. Another difference is these movies aren't political like Bourne is at all.
No,
like they seem very like just action-y blockbuster.
Oh yeah.
Not commentary on anything. Like some of them are a bit timely. I mean, number 2, we have, you know, maybe the ethics of gene splicing and, you know, medical companies and things like that. But it
ethics of spray tan.
Ethics of spray tan. But yeah, I mean, it never seems like someone's trying to make a point or
agreed.
Paul Greengrass forcing his liberal opinions on you.
And again, that's more that's a Bond thing.
Yeah.
You know, Bond is never trying to make a point.
No, exactly. Yeah, I was thinking of what like the big action sequences, the action franchises that we've been alive for. Like Bond. I mean, that started way before us. Yeah. But Bond, Bourne, Die Hard. I mean, I know it's not a spy series
just,
at all.
So we're straight, like, we're just not counting, like, sci-fi or...
No, just straight action-y. I think Mission Impossible keeps up with those.
Yes.
I don't think you like Bond.
No, I mean, that's another podcast, but... No, I think it definitely keeps up.
Okay. So the first one was 96, then 2000, 2006, and then 2012, is that right?
2011.
Yeah, 2011. And with spy movies, we always get technology. We get gadgets, but then we get the computers. We get the...
That was something else I was enjoying about Mission Impossible 1.
Yeah.
There's a 230 megabyte floppy disk that is what Max is using. And I remember thinking when I would first see it, damn, that's a lot of memory.
Yeah.
I totally remember thinking that as a kid, and now it's like...
it's an episode.
This recording that we've gone on now isn't a floppy disk. Like, it's way more than a floppy disk.
Yeah.
That was a huge floppy disk. But anyways,
continue. Yeah, well, no, that was just my question. Do you find that when they try to be cutting edge with technology that it makes it seem dated and kind of detracts from the movie when you go back and look at it? Or do you think that's just kind of a necessary thing?
I don't think it detracts. I'm old enough now that I'm smart to know. Well, I mean, I was alive at these times. I recognize these things.
Yeah.
Like I just pointed out. I think, it's sort of, it's spy movies from the 70s where you're laughing at these things, like things from before we were born.
Yeah.
Things that we never saw in our real lives. Now we have the context that we're sort of comparing them to our lives. Like, oh, there was a time when this was real and I saw it with my eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with it. And these movies, like you said, they're not meant to be timeless. They're these big blockbuster movies. They exist as commercial entities.
Yeah.
They're trying to make money, and they're trying to be the most of the moment as they can.
Yeah. So. Speaking of making money, this movie series makes money.
It does. That's why they keep making movies.
And Tom Cruise makes money from these.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Makes like $75 million a movie.
Well, yeah, there's that he didn't do a movie between Mission Impossible and Eyes Wide Shut, which is 3 years, because of how much money he made on Mission Impossible.
Well, yeah, they said he gets a salary, and then like a decent salary, and then takes... gross participation.
And then he had, back end, and then the producer aspects.
So. Yeah.
No,
it's $75 million a movie.
He does fine.
They're going to keep going.
Yeah. We don't need to worry about Tommy anymore.
Okay.
Tommy made it.
Yeah, and as they progressed, I mean, the Bond series got darker. Batman kind of got a little more darker and realistic. Did you think that this was going to happen with the series? Or as you said, this is just more popcorn-y fun than those?
Mm. I don't know. Because Batman, they were restarting a franchise, so they had to do something different.
Yeah.
That's what they chose to do differently. The Bond reboot was very much a reaction to Bourne and Batman. Although I guess Casino Royale is probably the same year as Batman Begins, right? Or maybe a year after, so it would have already been in production. But
Royale's 06, I think.
Okay, that's a year after Batman Begins. So it was already in production when Batman Begins was released. So the Bond reboot was, again, they were trying to get away from the things that people thought had gotten silly. So they had to go more realistic because they thought, the ice
mansion or whatever was in was it Die Another Day?
In the invisible car.
Yeah. So they had to go as far away from that, and the way to get as far away from that is to go quote unquote realistic. Of course, the Casino Royale's opening scene is this ridiculous parkour scene, but you know, it's sort of rooted in reality. And I think the Mission Impossible movies have sort of stayed. You pointed out how Mission Impossible 2 is reflective of the year 2000. As far as movies go, I've pointed out how it's reflective as far as Limp Bizkit songs go. I think in 2006 and 2011, I think both of those movies fit right where they're supposed to be. I think the one that stands out the most as being the least of its time is Mission Impossible, the first one. And it's just because it's so... Like, it's not super Hitchcockian, but there's a lot of Hitchcock there with the way the cinematography is done and the twists and the fact that Ethan never fires a gun. Again, that's sort of, that is sort of a contrast to what had just finished up. And I mean, John McClane's still going strong. He's sort of the anti super strong hero. Like, he's very human, but he's still killing people with guns. I think Mission Impossible is the only one that doesn't really look like 1996 to me.
Okay.
Of the time it's released. Yeah.
And we should close on the future of the franchise. Mm-hmm. What do you think we're going to get next? What direction do you think they're going? I mean, 5 is a sure thing, like Tom Cruise's death.
Yeah.
This is going to happen.
Yeah.
Any idea of what kind of director or what kind of way they're going to go with it?
I think it's going to be another sequel to 3 sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be... I don't think we're going to get a drastic change. I think Tom Cruise likes where they are. I don't think it's going to be Brad Bird, although J.J. Abrams was originally going to direct 4. So it's not like they're totally averse to keeping the same director.
Yeah.
I
mean, this one made the most money. So do you think they're going to try and make it similar to this or keep what they've been doing?
How different? Like, these movies just aren't very different from each other, I guess.
It's 3 and 4 especially.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to be drastically different from 4. I think it would be awesome and gutsy if they did do it, but I'm not super confident.
But you're still looking forward to 5 no matter what?
Oh, well, I mean, I see everything, but I'm looking forward to it a little less than I was looking forward to 4. And I was looking forward to 4 more than most people because Mission Impossible 3 was so underseen and underrated, but
Cool.
Well, did you want to talk about Jeremy Renner being the... Because we talked about him as an actor, but being the new face of the franchise. Because I didn't look hard, but I feel like that was just sort of something that people have said.
Assumed.
And I know there's that thing in 4 where he's doing the drop-down scene, you know, like where he's doing the hovering just above the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's like, But the thing, like, he's 8 years younger than Tom Cruise. It's not like Tom Cruise is going to... And they do these movies, what, like every 5-6 years? You know?
Yeah.
It's not like Tom Cruise is going to be like, okay, I'm done with this franchise. Jeremy Renner, you take over. And then he's going to do 4 more movies.
You have my $75 million. I don't want it.
Yeah. Like, Jeremy Renner's 41, you know? Like, he's, I guess, you know, just so much older than Tom Cruise when Tom Cruise started doing this franchise. So
if it was someone younger, you could see them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but, and I'm not sold on the idea that the Bourne movie that, Renner's going to be in, and I don't necessarily think it's going to be a huge hit. I think the Avengers is going to do fine. I don't think it's a guarantee that Hawkeye is going to get a movie. But he's sort of attaching himself to all these franchises. Renner will be in the 5th one for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think Tom Cruise is ready to say goodbye to this franchise at all.
Well, and I think that's what it is. I think it's just going to be Renner in it, and I think, as you said, they're going to try to make these movies less isolated from one another.
Yeah.
And he's just going to be there with Tom Cruise.
Yep.
And, you know.
Yeah.
He can learn some things.
Yeah, at some point, maybe he gets passed off. But I just think the lack of a real age difference is so...
Yeah.
Like, Tom Cruise even looks younger than Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? That's what I was going to say. Well, maybe he'll teach him, you know, all the things an action star needs to know about doing wheelies and jumping at people from it.
Yeah. Whatever. I'm looking forward to Mission Impossible 5. Judging by the amount of time in between these movies, I'm not expecting to see it anytime soon. But yeah, when I'm 30 and Mission Impossible 5 is in theaters, I'll be seeing it.
All right. Light the fuse.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. We really should have made your mission is should you choose to accept it at the beginning of this podcast, huh?
Yeah.
To listen to this whole 2-hour podcast of Mission Impossible.
I think that would lose.
So, yeah, this podcast will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Start lighting your cigarette like Jim Phelps at the beginning of Mission Impossible. Thank you for listening. Check back next week when the podcast won't burn up in your iPod.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. This episode has been brought to you by the Committee for a Sequel to Ghost Rider. As a thank you, we will now list all of our donating members. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.